it's super critical that we seek the best for ourselves, and by doing that, we seek the best relationships we can have with people.
All right, welcome back to the Society Says podcast. I'm super excited about today's episode. I feel like I say that every week. I'm just having really amazing people as guests on this platform, and it makes me super, super happy because I just think it's good for all of you guys to hear what everyone has to say. But I'm joined here today with Gail. Gail, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. Also very excited to do this podcast. Staria and I have known each other since, I think, middle school, maybe. So a long time. And I'm really looking forward to being a part of it. I am 21 years old. I live in Los Angeles at the moment. Just graduated college from Loyola Marymount University and doing big things out here, hoping to pursue photography as my career. And yeah, really great. Thank you for having me on.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I recently, well, actually, maybe this isn't too recent, but I came and visited you with my husband. Yes. And that was super exciting. The one thing that I was surprised by it was that you were living by yourself during like the thick of quarantine.
Yes. So also thank you for coming to visit me because I was quite lonely. So I was indeed by myself. I do actually have three other roommates. God bless them and I love them so much. But they decided to go home to be with their families during the quarantine. So just when it started to fall apart, if you will, Staria and Angel came and visited me, which was great. But at that point, they had already left. So yeah, it gets a little lonely sometimes when you are forced to stay inside and you don't have anyone there to kind of converse with and keep your sanity. So yeah, I can understand why some people really struggle with what's going on right now. But on the other side of things, I can also really understand why people struggle when they have people living with them. I know that because of the quarantine, a lot of domestic violence statistics have actually gone up. I don't know if you've seen anything on that on the news, but it is really surprising and really saddening to me to see that you don't really win either way. It's really difficult on either end of the spectrum.
It really is. It's a hard thing for humans to be contained, I think, because so much can happen, you know, so much, not just like physical things, but also emotional and dealing with like our thoughts. Like we're not only like contained physically in one little house or room, apartment, whatever it is, but like we're also kind of contained with our thoughts and emotions that are happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And humans are social creatures. So, you know, if you're not able to go out and express your need and your innate desire to socialize, you start to go a little loony and it gets to be a lot. It can really weigh on you. And I've noticed since the quarantine began, me and a lot of my friends have really struggled with the anxiety and the depression of being by oneself and not really having much to go off of in terms of, you know, that social desire, that drive to be around people and to be surrounded and comforted by other humans. It's kind of a primitive nature, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. I've too been struggling with, I have been going through a lot mentally, and it's hard for me because I'm not somebody that really, like, when I struggle with mental stuff, I can usually like kick it pretty fast and like get back on track. But this has been like the first time that it's been so hard to like be able to press that restart button on like my mental health.
Yeah, it's just because the situation is so incredibly different. None of us have ever dealt with anything like this before, I'm assuming. But a global pandemic is something that, you know, we need to give credit to the fact that none of us know what's going on. There is no really right way to go about this because even the experts are just figuring out as we go along how to cope with being alone, how to cope with being sick. If you do expose yourself to the virus and how to, you know, just go about adjusting your work life and your parenting life or whatever it is that you're doing to try and make the most of the situation that you're in. So yeah, I think that it's honestly, there's merit to letting everybody know that it's okay if you're struggling with something right now, because everyone's struggling with, you know, different versions of their quarantine. And especially if you're alone, I know a lot of people would kill to have anyone in the household right now just to have someone to talk to and relate to. And on the other side, a lot of people would kill to just be alone and away from their kids or their spouse or, you know, their relatives. So it's a struggle both ways. And I think everyone just needs to remember that, you know, you're valid to feel the way that you do. There's nothing wrong with having a bit of stress about the situation that you're in, so long as you know how to manage it healthily and you do seek help if you feel like you need to. I think that's one of the biggest things, is a lot of people, they don't seek the help that they need because they feel like their issue is not large enough or it's not significant enough to ask for that help, especially compared to those who are getting sick or maybe struggling with something a little, you know, the magnitude of their struggle might be more than yours in your opinion. So just keeping that awareness in check and knowing when it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah. So I know that you kind of said that you have had like your struggles through quarantine. What are some things that you have found helpful to be able to like take your mind off of something that's kind of scary or nerve-wracking? I guess to just distract you.
Sorry?
I guess, like, what have you done to, like, distract your mind from thinking so much about what's happening in the world?
So the problem, Staria, with me is that I have a really difficult time being alone. I know we all do, but me especially, in my opinion, I need people. I don't care who it is. I don't care if I don't know you, but I'm one of those people that I can't, you know, for example, even before the quarantine started, I can't sit and do my schoolwork in my room, you know, at my desk. I gotta go somewhere like a cafe or even just sit at a park at a table. Just knowing the people are around me is enough to feel comfort in my own space, you know, my own headspace. So for me, my at first method of distraction was, you know, engaging in a lot of FaceTime calls and a lot of Zoom parties and happy hours and things like that, virtual get-togethers, because I just find that solace in knowing people are there, even though they're not actually there. So that was really helpful. I think that anyone struggling with being alone during quarantine could definitely find a benefit in scheduling weekly or monthly, whatever it is, happy hour sessions or just talks and get-togethers with their families or their friends. And they can really find a lot of great time and quality time with those people to talk about how they're feeling. Or they could just, you know, talk about anything else to distract them from what's going on if they need that type of healthy distraction. I also really love the idea of doing yoga. So I actually saw on your page a little while ago, a video that you had posted explaining to your followers that you were practicing daily yoga because it's just something you wanted to make a routine out of. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to start doing yoga too. So I basically would get up in the morning and even if I didn't want to, I'd throw on a yoga video, even just a quick 15-minute morning flow or whatever I could find on YouTube. And doing that level of activity started out to feel mundane at first, but it slowly started to be something I looked forward to in the morning. So even though I had to kind of force it into being, it really helped having that little push, just the teeniest little push in the right direction. Because again, it gave me something to look forward to. It was something productive to get my blood flowing, and it really does start you off for the day. So I do definitely advocate for the benefits of yoga if people are willing to try it out. It's definitely a great physical activity too. If you find that you can't attend your local gym or, you know, go for a run like you used to. So yeah. And then just staying on top of your hobbies. I know a lot of my good friends, they have decided to use this quarantine time to sharpen their skills in a certain field or even to get new skills. A good friend of mine decided he wanted to learn to start coding, website coding. So I was really impressed with that type of aspiration. I think that's amazing that people want to use this time productively and get new skills out of it, especially because you can come out having these skills and maybe pursuing a job opportunity that you never could have pursued without those skills. So yeah, I think it's really helpful to be able to use the time while we have it to just find things that we love that we never really thought we would find before. I definitely could do a bit more of that, but I'm hoping to start finding other hobbies that I never picked up in the past.
Yeah, I think it's so awesome how people are really, I mean, I feel like it's like half and half. Some people are using this to like rest and to be lazy, which is totally fine. And some people are using it to like find something new that they've been wanting to try to see if they like it and to really like learn something different that they didn't know. But I have to say with the whole yoga thing, I think the reason that I dove into that, because I've always liked yoga, but I never was like fully into it. Like I got into it with quarantine. And I think it was because it's not only exercise that you're getting, but, well, I mean, the exercise within itself, it's very like, after you're done with yoga, I feel very like elongated, maybe that's like the wrong word, but
loose.
Like loose and like I feel
elevated,
just ready. And on top of that, it also like stretches your mind too, and it helps you to calm down if you're feeling anxious, and because it there's meditation that goes in with it. So I think
definitely,
that's why I really just like dove into it, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do this every morning because it helps, you know.
Absolutely. And even just having a routine, I know a lot of people, self-help advocates or just influencers or, you know, those people in opinion leader type positions, they will advocate for the morning routine. And I hear that term a lot in different ways, and I'm almost tired of hearing it because I hear it so often. But I do have to say that as someone who does not yet have a very strict morning routine established, I will say that slowly tacking on little things to make a routine out of every morning does kind of eventually become easier and make you feel more productive. Even if it's just, you know, I'm going to make my bed every morning when I get up, I'm going to read for 10 minutes, then I'm going to shower, then I'm going to have my coffee, whatever it is, you know, whatever your routine may be, even as little acts of your day, those things can really help you to feel productive and accomplished in some way. And I think that the most you can get out of that at the very least is that you have established a routine for yourself, which is more than a lot of people can say, and you've stuck to it and you've been dedicated to it. And that definitely is something to be proud of. And I think that that could really help pull people out of the rut that they might find themselves in a quarantine.
Yeah, definitely. So I have a question for you. We're talking a lot about like loneliness. Have you ever felt this degree of loneliness before?
That is a great question. Because I never really gave it much thought, to be honest. I think from a very surface level, everyone can argue that, you know, I may not have felt this degree of loneliness because I've never actually physically been this lonely before. But I think mentally, I've definitely been in this headspace for a while. I will say that loneliness is something that a lot of people struggle with. I was watching a TED Talk that spoke about loneliness as a kind of like an illness that develops, a psychological illness, and discovered that 1 in 5 Americans suffers from loneliness. So it is an issue among a lot of people. And it is something that people find serious enough that they would classify it as a mental illness. So I definitely have felt in that headspace before. I have felt like it is difficult to pull myself out of bed sometimes. I have felt like it is difficult to even reach out to people, because the sad irony of that is that you stop reaching out to people once you start to feel super lonely and you kind of just shut down everything. So it is something I've struggled with since leaving home in Seattle. Even in high school, I did struggle with that a little bit, but definitely this is a new degree and a new magnitude that I never really thought I would experience. It's definitely challenging my ability to bounce back, but being optimistic is one of the things that I think will help get out of those ruts. So I do remind myself when I can that I am thankful for the challenge. I'm thankful that I have the option to choose how I'm going to react to that feeling. I know it's not as cut and dry for some people, and they don't have the ability to manipulate that emotion. But I do feel thankful and grateful for the challenge that I am able to consciously make a decision. How am I going to feel today? How is my loneliness and my mental health going to affect my day today? Some days it's better than others. Some days I will submit to it and say, I'm just going to sit on my couch and watch, you know, a movie or watch a few movies. Who knows how I'm feeling today? But other days I'll say, you know what, I'm going to reach out to someone that I haven't seen in a long time and talk to them, maybe see if we can meet up. I'm going to go for a walk. So yeah, it's okay to have different reactions to that loneliness and decide that you want to cope with it in different ways. It's not that you always have to be consistent, because having that inconsistency is sometimes good for you, so that you can allow yourself those days of rest and the days that you need to recuperate.
Yeah, definitely. I love how you put all of that. It's
thank you.
It's so true that when you reach a certain point, you just stop reaching out to people. That has been one of the hardest things for me during this time, is that I know that I have, I think, like 2 or 3 friends that have reached that point where they are super lonely, they're having a hard time, but they haven't been reaching out to me, even though I tell them, like, reach out to me when you're feeling that way. But I'm finally realizing that, like, even though they want to have that human interaction, it's hard to, like, actually do that when you reach a certain point. Yeah, so I've, like, really tried to make a point to reach out to those friends that I know are feeling that way, now that, like, I'm starting to understand that, like, even though they really want it, it's just hard, you know? It's hard to reach out to people. So
it is. Yeah.
I mean, anybody that's listening, if you know that one of your friends is at that point, I would just put a reminder on your phone, like, to go off, like, 2 times a week to just, like, call them and check in on them, you know, like, and it doesn't even have to be that long of a talk, you know, just to, like, let them know that someone's thinking about them, because I'm sure that makes all the difference.
Oh yeah, I think that's a great idea. I love getting those messages from people when I do, and I do get them every once in a while from friends I haven't talked to, so those are the best. I think Saria put it so well, that if you do know someone's, you know, suffering from that, or even just having a difficult time with the quarantine, don't wait for them to reach out to you. If you can, take that initiative and, you know, see how they're doing. Even if you have to do it a few times to kind of get a response, I definitely encourage that as well.
Yeah, definitely. So I know that lately you've been going out. I don't know if you're doing this all of, like, quarantine, but I know lately you've been going out and you continue to take pictures.
Yes. So I have loved photography since middle school, high school-ish. And I really started to seriously pursue it here in Los Angeles. And I have been finding, actually even more recently, that Los Angeles is just the best. It's like a creative's playground. It's awesome. You get so much diversity in your events and scenery and opportunities, that it's just the greatest. It's got the best potential. So I have been taking advantage of the momentous historical moment that we are going through that is the global pandemic. And as a matter of fact, even the Black Lives Matter movement with the protests going on and things like that, it's super important for us to capture and remember everything that's going on so that we can learn from it and educate ourselves in the future. And so during the beginning of the quarantine, you know, before the strictness of the stay-at-home order fell into place, I was going out and capturing as many photos as I could of the city, because as everyone knows, Los Angeles is an incredibly busy urban area, and it was just so bizarre to see empty freeways, empty streets, closed off buildings, empty subway stations, just absolutely out of the ordinary. So I did decide to go out and shoot what I could of those areas. And then once the protests began in Los Angeles, I really wanted to get involved, but I just didn't know, you know, how I would be involved, how I was going to advocate for the movement. And I knew that capturing photos and sharing them with the world so that people could see the type of emotions and the type of activism that goes on at those protests, that would be hopefully some sort of an impact on some people. So I decided to go out to a few protests. I think I went to maybe 4 or 5 of them in the Los Angeles area over the course of 1 week. And I just started shooting what I could and what I was seeing. And I did get really great supportive feedback from people. And I'm so glad that I did, because I was really hoping that it would mean something to someone at the very least, even if it was just one person, that would be enough for me. So I was really glad that I was able to have the privilege to go out and capture those things.
Well, I think there's so much power behind using our talents that we're given to help spread important messages and spread awareness. So I think that that's awesome that you used, like, you know that you're good at photography and it's something that you've grown to develop.
I don't know if I'm great, but
oh, you're good.
thank you so much.
But I just think it's great seeing people use their talents, and I've seen a lot of photographers that I follow using their talent, and they're going to protests and they're doing that, they're capturing. Well, we need to document what's happening.
Absolutely. And I am a history major, so I firmly believe that history must be recorded even in the present, if that makes sense. Being a historian of the present is super important to maintaining and archiving everything so that we have that to refer to later on in the future. So yeah, I think it's, again, I feel incredibly privileged to have the opportunity to go out and be in the midst of everything that's going on that is going to make history and hopefully have that level of impact on a few people.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. So before 2020 really hit us hard, you were photographing, photographing. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I just said that. That was embarrassing.
That's okay, it happens. I do it all the time.
You were taking pictures at concerts, right?
I was. It wasn't incredibly busy for me as a concert photographer, but I was just starting to kick off my brand in music photography and starting to get the ball rolling, I guess, and starting to get more business. So I was really sad, of course, when the quarantine was laid down, because that did mean no more music events. And for me, that is devastating, especially because not only do I do that for work, but I love music. It's one of my favorite things. And I was quite sad to hear that I wouldn't be able to attend any more concerts this year. But yeah, I was shooting a lot for artists performing, and I did do a little bit of traveling in that. So that was an amazing opportunity. I just love that job so much. It's a blessing that I was able to get to that point. I definitely got there because I was lucky in a lot of areas. So it's amazing. It's such a great job.
No, that's so cool. So I feel like everybody knows that I feel like when it comes to photography and even videography, those are very male dominant careers. And so I want to ask you what your experience has been with building up your platform and like eventually getting those jobs. Like, did it take a long time for your pictures to get noticed?
So unfortunately, I feel like I'm not at the level to where I can speculate on, you know, statistics as far as a male versus a female, but observing other female photographers and seeing their male counterparts in that industry, I definitely would say from my own experiences as well that it's tough to get yourself established, to get your foot in the door as a female is not an easy feat. I know that it is discussed quite a bit and that the industries are getting a lot better at being more inclusive and, you know, obviously giving the same opportunities to women as they do men. And I do know a lot of really successful female photographers in the music industry. Personally, my biggest struggle as a female in that industry is that you are surrounded by guys quite a bit. And the ratio is a little thrown off, if you will. So one of the things that I personally have struggled with is, you know, being taken seriously as that business person. And a lot of times I have dealt with men who, you know, because you are a woman in the industry, they choose to speak to you differently, or they even get a little flirty with you, which, you know, is fine in some respects, I suppose, to some people. But if it clouds their view of you as a working person, as a business person, then it starts to become problematic. So a handful of times I have dealt with clients of mine or their managers who, you know, will maybe try to earn your services for free or try to, you know, ask you on dates or see if you are willing to do extra work for less. And so those kinds of things, personally, I've never seen happen to a male photographer. I know, I'm sure it probably does, but I have never actually seen it happen. And I've noticed that even when you're just starting out, it's difficult to get business because you're not very well known. You're not really networked enough yet to know a lot of the people who will give you the gigs that you need. And so a lot of times you do end up offering your services for free just to have a competitive edge to the ones who are applying next to you. So I've done so much of my work for free in exchange just for, you know, tickets to the show or bringing a friend with me. Sometimes I've asked for that in exchange for my services. And that's okay. Those kinds of exchanges are good as long as you're aware of it and you consent to that. But yeah, it's difficult being the individual that people see and they think, you know, this girl is out of place here. And maybe I'm the kind of person who wants to take advantage of that. And I have met people that are like that. It's tough coping with your self-worth as a creative when you meet those people, because you start to question whether your work is good, if you're even worthy of being there. And yeah, I think that a lot of people, guys and girls, will struggle with that in this industry. It's a very cutthroat industry.
Oh yeah, definitely. Everybody's fighting to reach the top, I suppose. So because of that, I'm sure that there comes some like self-doubt occasionally. Have you ever felt like that? Like you have been encountered with a situation where you kind of just have that moment thinking like, oh, maybe I can't like move forward with this industry. Have you ever like had that before?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the thing about creatives, and I'm sure a lot of other artists would agree with me on this one. Even you, I'm sure, would agree that we are constantly chasing something. It doesn't stop ever. There is no bar, because once you get to a certain level of good, there is another level added to it. So you're constantly chasing being better, being more, being, you know, whatever it is that you're seeking, you're always chasing that dream and it doesn't just stop somewhere. And so I have absolutely sat with myself for very long periods of time thinking, is my work worth it? The rejection involved in the industry is especially, you know, detrimental to one's feeling of that. And so when I would, you know, seek out jobs and offer my services and, you know, try to advocate for myself as a business person, you get a lot of rejection. You can send maybe 50 emails out to artists to see if they're willing to work together and maybe get two back if you're lucky. And so the level of rejection there is what really sat with me for a long time, thinking, you know, maybe they don't want to work with me because I'm not good enough, because I'm a girl, because I'm not well established enough in this industry and they don't know who I am. And it's hard not to have those thoughts. Everyone has that level of thinking to some extent, I believe. And it took a lot of support from my friends to actually pull myself out of that, believe it or not. I wasn't actually able to do it on my own. I still do get those thoughts every now and then, but I do have artists who I've worked with who are just amazing and who love the work that I do, and they remind me all the time. I have artists who would repost my work even when it wasn't of them, and they would say, like, check out this amazing photographer. And that to me was just priceless. And I loved that type of enthusiasm for my creative projects. And then also friends and people who would see my work on the daily and see the kind of things I would go through to edit the photos and get the photos and put them out on social media. Those people who saw the processes that I went through and they respected those and they appreciated them, they were the ones who helped me pull myself out of that as well. So it's a, you know, it's kind of a tug of war between the two mindsets, but I will say that I feel I have a healthy balance right now of both. On the one hand, I am able to have that constructive criticism where I know I'm constantly seeking to do better. On the other hand, I have a lot of support for the work that I do, and those are the people who keep me going, and those are the people who I care to impress with my photos, and that's something that I'm always chasing. So I just love that about, you know, my followers and my friends, and I love them so much, and I appreciate everything that they do to keep me driven.
Yeah, of course. And I just want to touch on one thing that you said, how when we reach this level of like skill or happiness with our work, like there's always like a next level. And I feel like as creatives, one of the hardest things that we struggle with, like with our mentality, is that we'll be happy with our work for maybe like 5 minutes, and then we move on and we're like, no, we need to do better. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I just think it's a mindset that will honestly never end. I don't know of any creative that is like successful, quote unquote successful, and like happy with their work and like they've just plateaued. Like, I think if you're a creative and if this is truly what you do and what you love, like you never stop trying to shoot for something better.
Yeah. And I know that you definitely have those, you know, feelings and emotions as well as a creative person working on your own brand with Society Says. I'm sure that you are definitely a firsthand experiencer of those things, you know, because it's you're constantly chasing something that you want to be. And I think that that's one of the most powerful things about artists and creatives, is that they always have that drive to just, you know, to succeed. So to succeed their own happiness in their work, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very like passionate and personal thing that we partake in, I guess.
Yes.
So I want to have our last topic be talking about healthy and unhealthy relationships, and kind of just talking about your experience with those, and I guess specifically walking away from unhealthy relationships is what I'm curious to talk about, because I think that's something that everybody has to do through life. And I think it's something we need to talk about so that people know that it's okay to do that, you know?
That's a great topic, and I definitely think it plays well into the work that I do. And I will just say briefly that sometimes those unhealthy relationships might be personal, sometimes they might be work related. And I definitely, in the music industry as a photographer, have had to walk away from really unhealthy situations that I was involved in. And it does take a lot of strength to actually pick yourself up and take that leap of faith and do it. And I know that if anyone else is dealing with something similar, I can speak from my own experience and say that it's not an easy thing to even recognize that you have to leave the situation, let alone leaving it. And if you're not getting everything you deserve out of that specific relationship. For example, a lot of the work I was doing, again, I wasn't paid for. And sometimes people would start to take advantage of that and say, it's an honor for you to work with me. I'm going to have you continue to work with me, but without pay. And it is really hard for me to say, actually, as much as I would really love to work with you and be that person for you, I just feel that I deserve more recognition and I deserve better from you, better treatment or more respect, whatever it is. And having the confidence, I think, is the key. Having the confidence to know that about yourself and having the self-respect to tell those people that you are much more deserving of their respect too, that takes a lot of courage. I'm actually reading a really great book right now that's called The 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. And Jordan Peterson, he basically talks about how to survive the chaotic world that we live in today. And one of the sections that I was reading yesterday was super helpful to me as a person who struggles with sometimes not being able to recognize unhealthy relationships before it's too late. And one thing that he does make a note of is if you have a friend whose friendship you wouldn't recommend to your sister or your father or your son, why would you have such a friend for yourself? And I think that that goes beyond the realm of friendships and transcends into work relationships, into spouse relationships, into dating relationships, whatever you want to see it as. But in my case, for those experiences in the work field that I was doing, I found that if I wasn't having, a good work relationship with someone that I wouldn't recommend to someone I really loved and cared about, then why was I putting myself through that? And that type of self-awareness is really important to finding the strength to walk away from unhealthy people. So, I think that that's super important.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, that, if you wouldn't want anybody that's close to you to be a part of this relationship or friendship, then like why are you still there? And I'm a firm believer that whoever is close to you, and not even just close to you, anybody that you let in your life, they should be people who lift you up and who make you feel really good about who you are and what you're doing in the world. They should never, ever make you feel any less than great.
Yeah, 100%. And the biggest takeaway that I got from Peterson's thought process, I guess, was that at the end of the day, you're acting on your own behalf. And a lot of us as humans, we love the idea of being able to go in and help people and advocate for people when they need our help. But he does argue that that only goes so far in saving, the person from whatever it is they're going through. But it does end up deteriorating you as a person because sometimes we get so caught up in trying to help others and trying to maybe pull someone out of a hole that they've fallen into that we become complacent ourselves and we sit there and we think that just by doing that, we're doing enough for the person and for ourselves. But really, we may be neglecting our own well-being. We could be neglecting all of the opportunities that are given, thrown at us, that we could go out and be something and make something amazing out of ourselves and even lead by example. But instead, we're so tunnel visioned on helping one person or helping many people who are suffering or struggling with their own neglect to themselves. So yeah, I think that that does definitely have an impact on me, because I always used to be one of those people who said, you know, oh, I can help this person, I can fix them. And the term fixer is a really popular term in the dating world, I've noticed. And it's really important to recognize if you have those qualities, because at the end of the day, you know, they may not be benefiting you. You may think that they are, and you may think that you are doing a good thing for someone, but you might just be hurting yourself and them in the process. So it's really important just to keep that open eye, that clear head about doing what's best for you and then leading by example and being able to have that influence on others.
And you know, you have to be careful. I'm going to share like a little story. I'm going to keep it vague just because I want to keep the privacy of who I'm talking about. But I think this was 2 summers ago that I became friends with somebody who has a past with like a drug history and alcoholism, and they clung on to me because, you know, I was being that, I guess, quote unquote fixer. And it ended up being like one of the worst things that I could have done, because it was right before I moved to Thailand, and yeah. I became such an important person to this person that when they found out that I was leaving, it actually made everything go south and they ended up relapsing. And I felt horrible because I felt like it was my responsibility, and I felt like it was like I was the reason that they were relapsing. And, you know, in the beginning, I was just trying to be like a good person, a light in their world. But I think that's great to be a light in someone's world. And I think it's great to be friends with people that are going through a hard time and want to be there to help. But I feel like there is a very certain way that you have to go about it, because you never know like when your paths are going to end up like drifting and how that could affect the other person. So in that situation, it was just very scary because I knew that they were relapsing and they were getting to a point where they just didn't want to live anymore. And that was the first time I had ever experienced something like that. And at the time I was 19, so I was still pretty young and like didn't know how to handle it. But they're okay now. I just want to say that now. They're doing great. They're actually having like a kid. They're, you know, they're doing awesome. But in the moment, like I learned so much from that, that like it probably wasn't the best idea for me to fully like full on befriend this person. I think it would have been better if I would have just stayed a friendly acquaintance, and I think that would have just been good enough for that person, if that makes any sense at all. I just feel like
oh, absolutely, everything you said, I personally, and I know so many people listening have probably been through the same or something similar. And it's because it's so common in the world. A lot of people, they brandish their suffering as a result of the world's, as a result of the world, basically, and that humanity is at fault for that. But most of the time, a lot of the things that people suffer with are internal, and they're things that they're battles they have to fight on their own, like your friend that you were talking about. And the biggest takeaway I've learned from those types of relationships is something that Peterson actually puts very eloquently. He says, basically, treat yourself as someone you are responsible for taking care of, because at the end of the day, that's all we are. You are responsible for taking care of yourself, and that reflects on other people. So if you're going to take so much time and effort in taking care of those individuals like you did with your friend, but you're not giving that level of care to yourself. And I'm sure that's why you started to feel horrible and responsible for those types of things that they were involved in. That starts to lead you down your own hole, down your own dark path. And it's just really critical to remember that we are the writers of our own stories.
Yeah, definitely.
It's super critical that we seek the best for ourselves. And by doing that, we seek the best relationships we can have with people, people who uplift us, people who actually encourage that we go out there into the unknown, people who encourage our success rather than the people who need parts of our success to benefit their own well-being, who need the validation from us to be healthy, or, you know, in your friend's case, who needed that light from you in order to be just, you know, a healthy human being and in a healthy mindset. Those types of people are the ones who maybe do hold us back in our lives. And we need to remember that if we surround ourselves with good people, we will uplift ourselves. And sometimes that starts with being your own uplifter and then seeking those good relationships out.
Oh yeah. I mean, we can't even begin to help other people in our life or even begin to love other people if we can't help ourselves and love ourselves and be at a point where we're taking, like, truly taking care of ourselves. I really do believe in that. Yeah. Well, to finish off this topic, because I don't think we've really spoken on this, but how do you even go about getting rid of toxic friendships and relationships in your life?
Personally, I don't think I have all the answers when it comes to that, but I will say that I have had successful and unsuccessful examples of that in my life, where I was either able to successfully get myself out of a situation, or maybe I was, you know, stuck in something for a long time. But at the end of the day, I think that the thing that worked out best for me was not hearing it from other people. It didn't matter what my friends thought. It didn't matter what my parents thought. It didn't matter about that, because at the end of the day, it matters what you think. And I will say that I have had unhealthy relationships with people, toxic relationships, if you will, that a lot of people told me, you know, don't involve yourself in that. Don't be friends with that person, or you're just hurting yourself in the process. That's not good for you. It looks bad. Sometimes you just know in your heart, I think this is something I need to stick through because, you know, I see the good in this person. And sometimes it turns out that way, and that's great. Sometimes it doesn't, and you begin to notice this person really is chipping away at you. And in those cases, I would say the best way to ease yourself out of a toxic relationship is to seek support from the people who you have healthy relationships with. Seek out the good relationships that you have with people, and then find out what are the advantageous, healthy benefits to those relationships that you are receiving, and try to compare and contrast the toxic ones to the healthy ones that you have, and recognize in your own self, either can you pursue the healthy traits in this toxic one and hopefully salvage it and make it advantageous to your health, or is it just one of those things where you need to acknowledge that it may not be good for you and you might have to walk away from it? And if you do have to walk away, just know that it is really hard having the feeling that you might be responsible for that person's destruction or that person's despair or suffering, that maybe you were taking on some of that weight for them for a while and you are that role for them. that is not your job in life. Your purpose in life is not to take on the burdens of other people in order to help lift them up. At the end of the day, they're either going to seek that refuge from other relationships, or they are going to have to be forced to start solving those issues themselves. And I just think that it's important that we all realize that if those people, if you have relationships that are weighing you down like that, you must understand that that is not your purpose in life, and you have a much greater purpose to be uplifted by healthy relationships, to uplift your healthy friends and the people who actually love you and care and support you. Those are the things that you should be putting on your shoulders, because those are the things that uplift you in return. I think that hopefully answers that question. I'm, again, not an expert, but I noticed that over time, those are the kinds of things I've recognized from those relationships.
Yeah, I think that was so great. Thank you. So I just want to ask before we wrap up, do you have any like last minute advice that you have for anyone that's listening?
My advice, it's a very loaded question, but my advice, I think, to listeners, if you got anything out of this conversation, I would just again encourage that you do things for yourself. It is great to be selfless and to put others first and, you know, do the work of the community and the common good. But I think that this is one of those rare moments that someone's going to advise that you do something for yourself. Do be selfish sometimes. I think that a lot of people don't hear that enough. A lot of people feel like they have to earn it. And no, that's not how I view it at all. I think that we all need to be a little selfish and take care of ourselves and love ourselves. And as a result of that, we will be helping the people around us by keeping ourselves healthy, keeping ourselves in check, and keeping ourselves uplifted. We will be in a good and better position to uplift those around us. And so that would be my advice. Be a little selfish sometimes. It's okay to do. You don't have to earn it all the time. But if that is your way of feeling like you need to be selfish, then by all means, go for that. But again, this is your friendly reminder that we are all in it for ourselves, and we must treat ourselves like someone we are responsible for taking care of, because you are living with your own conscience. And so get to know it and be friends with it.
I think that's great. Yeah. Don't always think as being selfish as a bad thing. Some, you know, it does have its negative side, but I think that being selfish is something that we need to remember to do, because we have to take care of ourselves before we can really do other things for people. So definitely. Yeah, I think that was great. Thank you so much. You were an
awesome
guest.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for everybody who joined with this week's episode. I hope that it was something that you could take away and learn some new things. Maybe if you're struggling with any of these topics, I hope that they were helpful to you. And I really appreciate all of you guys for joining me and listening to the Society Says podcast. And don't forget to tune in next week. See ya.
Thank you.